This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. Bill Russell is with me, and we are with Dr. Richard Jackson, the director of the National Center for Environmental Health here at the CDC, one of America's real plums. One of the things we can be most proud of is the CDC. I don't want to leave depression quite yet, because I know that it is something with which we all deal, this kind of a spectrum, that this manic depressive that I think of as being, am I on one end or the other, that part of the human condition is that we have good days and bad days, but that depression really is a serious concern as public health, and that things as simple as A, recognizing it, B, talking about it, and then C, doing things like increasing our activity. This business of depression is a big, and if we can get off of our depressed bottoms and go do things about these other things that affect us, that this positive and negative feedback loop is a real important subject to me.
It is to me as well. There's a wonderful research area around something called social capital. Wonderful work out of Harvard and many other places. It was discovered that communities that faced disasters, floods and hurricanes, that some of them recovered very well. These communities came back, were vibrant places again, and other communities just disappeared and could not recover. And what was found was the communities that recovered best were those that had strong social interactions. They could be religious, cultural, other kinds of interactions where people knew and connected and took care of each other. And I think in some ways this loss of social capital and this connectedness is in some ways connected to this epidemic of depression that we are looking at in our society. There's some very interesting research also going on about natural contact. Natural contact. In other words, when people are operating in environments that are somewhat bereft of trees, of vegetation, of animals, just natural connections. Very good evidence that, at least in multiple studies, that people that have pets seem to live longer and do better than those that don't. And E.O. Wilson, and when he talks about biophilia, comes back to this point that, you know, our species is probably a couple million years old, and it's only been the last 50 or 60 or 80 years that we've stopped being connected to nature in any real kind of way. And that's just a flicker of the eye in the evolution of the human race.
Well, it's abrupt, and we also forget that we are social animals and that we really need contact both with each other and with other things of which we are a part.
We were inspecting some of the paintings from the Pushkin collection, the Impressionists, but this particular exhibit goes well back into French history, into the 16th, 17th century, and comes forward. And one of the striking things was a certain point in there, as communities became more urbanized, people were giving artists large sums of money to go out and reproduce country life and bucolic splendor, and apparently for the reason that they were feeling alienated within their own environment, and they wanted to, at least by having the picture there, be able to reconnect with nature.
There's some very interesting work about people's, whether someone wants to walk down a street or not. And if the street has store windows and different complexities of texture in the bricks or the stones that are being used or the wood that's being used to build the walls. If there are windows or if there are things to look into, people want to walk down that street and they'll stop and look. The way we've designed our communities at this point is for people moving at 50, 60 miles an hour. And the reason the signs in front of fast food franchises are garish and grab us by the eyeballs is not that the designer had hideous taste. It is because they absolutely have to grab your attention. And so
we're noisy environment.
It's a visually very noisy environment, aside from the harshness of some of the actual auditory stimuli as well. So I think this whole system that we are living in, we're bringing our kids into, is something we need to really look to, because again, we're not going to have healthy human beings operating in a brutalized and unhealthy environment.
I just think it's wonderfully bizarre to have a physician as an environmentalist. Now, that's sort of a change of thinking as well.
I have to tell you that I've probably studied and learned in this whole area for almost 25 years, and about 4 to 5 years ago realized that even though I said I did environmental health, I knew nothing about environmental health. I knew a lot about environmental disease. And we docs are very good at the diagnosis and figuring out what's wrong. We do pretty well at the treatment and management. But we are not very well trained or knowledgeable about health. And in some ways, I think environmental health is done by the designers, the architects, the landscape architects. It's one of the reasons I'm pushing all the county health departments in the nation to hire someone who is a lead person from that county health department to deal with the planning agency, to deal with the design agencies and the rest. It, you know, right now they do environmental impact reports to see what's going to happen to trees and birds. We do no kind of impact to see what's actually going to happen to communities. If kids can't walk to their schools safely, that's an important thing to know. If there are no places for people to convene or social connect, that's important. If people have to spend 2 hours commuting, that is important to health as well. And the county health officer who is worried about the, yes, they're worried about, you know, rabies and West Nile virus and everything else, but they also need to be worried about these chronic diseases that are so prevalent.
So rather than just looking at obesity, you're saying this is a big picture.
We will never cure obesity. You know, the whole food production system puts out almost 4,000 calories a day per American, and the entire industry is dedicated to having us consume as many calories as we can, whether it's advertising or the food production industry or the rest. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of efforts, but ultimately we're going to have to figure out how not just to reduce our caloric intake, but also to up our energy burn, how much we're burning off. And our whole thrust in the late part of the 20th century was to burn less energy, not more, of our own personal energy, not fossil fuels.
Although that's not a bad idea either.
I agree.
You mentioned several times chronic diseases, and thinking as you talked about it, it would seem to me that those chronic diseases, just from an economic standpoint and from a quality of life standpoint, in some ways are more destructive than an acute disease.
None of us, we're all, it's very important to worry about acute diseases. My own dad died when I was 3 of polio. Died in about 2 days, and I think it's why I went into public health. The eradication of polio is something that CDC will be enormously proud of, as we are the eradication of smallpox. The other acute disease that we have to worry about enormously is trauma, injuries, whether it's violence or just accidental, if you will, injuries, and designing communities that are much safer for individuals. But the rest of them are heart disease. You treat it by good physical exercise and watching your diet and some medical stuff, but there's a lot of preventive stuff that we can do. My own mother is now 80, and she can do nothing about the fact that she is older white woman who smoked for a long time, but she's got terrible osteoporosis. And I had no idea as a young pediatrician how difficult and miserable a disease osteoporosis is. Every morning she takes a pill that costs $2, and she has to sit up for 30 minutes to get that pill down. It's supposed to toughen up her bones. Well, wouldn't it have been a much better investment to have gotten her the sunlight, weight-bearing exercise, and calcium in her diet all those years? And are we growing another generation of women that are whose spines are collapsing sequentially over time? These are going to be the big diseases of the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, and particularly as the, you know, we're at the leading edge of the baby boom, and this huge cohort of people is going to be increasingly, to put it elegantly, dumped on the healthcare system with this burden of chronic diseases, and it would seem,
and we're going to live a long time with them.
Well, maybe. But that the economics of that and the just again the quality of life issues are really serious challenges.
You know, you have a supposition in your comment, which is that we have a healthcare system, but I don't think anyone really thinks we do. When we have 40 million people uninsured who aren't even getting any care,
and then another 40 million who are underserved by the care they do get.
That is correct. And yet we spend $1.06 in this country. That is an immense amount of money that we're spending. And 20 years from now, every 2 workers will have to support one dependent, whether it's an old person or a young person or a disabled person. So the costs that we are ahead for us in terms of health care are going to be tremendous. And the more we can defer the advent the arrival of chronic diseases, disability, and cost, the better. And we will always need to take care of, and I don't in any way mean to demean this, but these are going to be extraordinarily important issues for us to be grappling with over the next generation.
And the person who does some of this grappling is Dr. Richard Jackson, the director of the National Center for Environmental Health at the CDC. Bill Russell and I, Paula Gordon, invite you to be with us when we return in just a moment for more.